Angie's List is now Angie, the nation's largest home services marketplace, and they're here to help homeowners get all their jobs done well. Angie has helped over 150 million homeowners care for their homes. Whatever your home project, big or small, indoor or outdoor, come to Angie to connect with and hire skilled professionals to get the job done well. If I can use Angie and enjoy it, so can you. Angie can help you find the best price for your project. Angie lets you request and compare quotes from multiple pros in just a few taps or book services at an upfront price based on local data. Angie has cost guides to tell you what others have paid for similar projects both nationally and in your area. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I.com. Or download the app today. The app and the website are free to use. Hi, everyone. Judge Andrew Napolitano here for Judging Freedom. Today is Wednesday, April 24th, 2024. Phil Giraldi will be here in just a minute on Does Israel Have Joe Biden Trapped? But first this.
How do you really feel about your financial future right now, today? Stable or uncertain? Despite all the happy talk that the Fed and the banks want you to buy into, I believe that 2024 is going to be a very unstable year, politically and financially. That's one of the reasons I decided to buy physical gold and silver, and I suggest you should do the same and do it now. Why? Because throughout times of economic uncertainty, gold and silver have rightly earned a reputation for stability. Owning precious metals has made me feel more stable, and it can do the same for you. Reach out to my friends at Lear Capital and get their free wealth protection guides. You can reach them at 800-511-4620. Lear has earned an excellent reputation by helping thousands of customers just like you move portions of their retirement savings into Lear gold and silver IRAs. It's easy to do, and it's tax and penalty free. Don't be caught off guard. Experts predict the markets may tank again. You'll be happy if you have protection in place. So call Lear at 800-511-4620, 800-511-4620, or go to LearJudgeSnap.com and tell them your friend the judge sent you.
Phil Giraldi, welcome here, as always, my dear friend. With respect to Israel, the Democratic Party, AIPAC, Joe Biden's wish to be reelected, his history with Israel, the slaughter in Gaza, all of these things. What is Joe Biden's dilemma?
Well, he has the classic dilemma that politicians sometimes fall into, and I describe it as kind of a trap. The problem here is that by satisfying the demands of one constituency in the Democratic Party, there is another growing constituency in the Democratic Party, which would, in theory, deny him the votes that he needs to get reelected. And of course, what I'm specifically referring to is the power of the Israeli lobby, if one wants to describe it that way, in Democratic Party politics. The Democratic Party donations, its funding, has been a majority from Jewish sources for quite some time, and this is something that potentially, as we saw in the last couple of elections, where you were talking sometimes in terms of $100 million.
Oof.
It's substantial. And if these are
American donations,
right,
to politicians in both parties who will support Israel no matter what it does.
Yeah, well, it's there is a counterpart in the Republican Party too, like we saw with Sheldon Adelson and Donald Trump.
Oh, right. That was another 100 million from Adelson and his folks alone.
So we're talking about huge sums of money that in themselves can decide who's going to win an election through the promotion of the candidates. And so Biden is essentially got to give Israel, give Netanyahu everything he wants. And we've just seen that last week in terms of another $26 billion from the U.S. Treasury going to Israel. And he's got to do that, or his Israel supporter contingency will send its money somewhere else and will give him bad press in the media that they control. And so this is a very bad message for Biden. He's got to do what Israel wants. But on the other hand, there is a younger voter in the Democratic Party that is somewhat progressive. And many of them are, incidentally, Jewish, who are outraged by what is going on, the genocide that we all know is taking place in the Middle East, and which the government is not willing to concede is actually happening. And he's got to worry about where those voters are going to go. They may not want to vote for Donald Trump, but they may not want to vote for him in some swing states that are leaning liberal. So this is a big issue for Biden. He's caught either way.
We're posting something called Track AIPAC. This is the AIPAC website, which actually this is the website for the U.S. Senate, lists members of the Senate. All you have to do is click on their faces, and you can donate to their campaigns through AIPAC. I mean, this is what AIPAC does. So far, I see as many Republicans as Democrats, but this is what they do. If you go over to the House side, you're going to see hundreds and hundreds of them. But this is what you're talking about on the one hand, right, Phil?
Yeah, you're talking about direct donations to candidates. And this is why Congress votes, you know, overwhelmingly for anything that's for Israel. And because they are all on the take, too. It's not just Joe Biden. It's the whole system. The whole system has been corrupted by money. And there is more money in that one constituency than there is anywhere else.
So Biden's dilemma, and don't let me put words in your mouth, is he needs the cash from the Israeli lobby, but he has to win Michigan also. And he can't win Michigan unless he stops slaughtering Palestinians, more or less.
Yeah, that's one example. Michigan is the most outstanding example because it has a large Arab population. But New Jersey does, too.
Yes.
And so there are a number of states where this is going to be maybe a swing vote, where they either don't vote or they vote for another candidate. My friends are mostly going to be voting for the Green Party if it appears on the ballot.
You know, I don't want to get too deep into Republican versus Democrat politics. We don't do this on the show, but Donald Trump is holding a huge rally here in New Jersey. I thought to myself, why is he wasting his time in New Jersey? New Jersey hasn't gone for a Republican since Reagan, when he won 47 or 48 or 49 states. I don't know, maybe their polls are telling them that if the Muslim population in this state, which is maybe second only to Michigan in size, stays home, it's a dogfight. I don't know. Well, I would think if Biden loses Jersey, he can't possibly win. I mean, this is one of those givens that the Democrats assume they always have in the post-Reagan era.
Yeah, that's right. And of course, as you know, and I know, The Muslim community in New Jersey is quite affluent.
Yes.
And it has, the ability to get its spokesman into the media, New York, New Jersey, Connecticut media. And there are a lot of downsides to this, but I'm curious as to how Trump is going to try to finesse it with the Muslim community, because it's pretty obvious that he is also reading the same tea leaves.
Yes.
And feeling very strongly. He has to lean very strongly on Israel.
Yes, yes. He's probably as pro-Zionist. I'm sure he is, not probably. He's obviously as pro-Zionist as Biden is. Give us the brief history of Iran, Syria, and Israel. When Israel attacked and destroyed the Iranian consulate in Damascus a few weeks ago and murdered 13 people, including three generals, that was unprovoked, wasn't it? I mean, Iran had never attacked Israel or an Israeli asset. And as you answer this, correct me if I'm wrong, throw Syria in the mix as well. Isn't it true, for all the times that Israel attacks the Syrians, the last time Syria attacked Israel was 50 years ago?
What makes a life a good one? Is it the adventure you have? Or the friends you find along the way? Maybe it's pursuing your passion while striving to protect, defend, and save what you believe in every single day. So, what makes a life a good one? In the Coast Guard, we think it's all of the above and more. But you'll have to find out for yourself. Visit GoCoastGuard.com to learn more.
That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient, comfortable. Ah.
Yeah, that's correct. I mean, the fact is, this is an interesting aspect of what's going on, that that Israel has been regularly attacking by one means or another three of its neighbors with which it is not at war. And that's Lebanon, that's Syria, and that's Iran. And so they're getting away with this. And of course, the United States looks the other way. The United Nations, because of the U.S. veto, is incapable of doing anything about it. And this has been going on for a long time. And over the past, since 2017, when the relationships hardened a bit, where Iran became closer to Iraq, Iran became closer to Syria. You have basically Israeli attacks on targets mostly in Syria that they claim are linked to Iran in one way or another. So it's a funny thing going on. They're getting away with it. They've been getting away with it. And now all of a sudden, when Iran responds, it's a war crime. It's a whatever. It's whatever the New York Times is telling you it is. And this is the kind of stuff that's going on. Israel gets away with literally murder. And it's because of the protection afforded primarily by the United States and some of its European allies.
Hasn't Israel murdered Iranian civilians who are chemists and astrophysicists and scientists?
Yeah, Iran has been the victim of Israeli assassinations. But of course, I would also point out that Iran has been a victim of United States assassinations. In January 2020, Donald Trump, the guy who wants peace, assassinated, arranged for the assassination of Qasem Soleimani, who was in Baghdad discussing peace talks.
A horrible, horrible thing that American presidents do. Barack Obama did the same thing. He actually killed two people that were born in the United States. They were American citizens, Anwar al-Awlaki and his son. George W. Bush did the same thing. Bill Clinton did the same thing. I don't know if Clinton had the sophisticated drones that that Bush, Obama, and Trump had. But this is murder, pure and simple. Two vetoes at the UN that you point out in a recent piece. This is ridiculous what the U.S. said. One veto. I'm only laughing because the U.S. statement is so absurd. One veto wants to condemn the destruction of the Iranian consulate in Damascus. And the U.S. says, no, we vetoed because the facts are unclear. What facts are unclear? Isn't it crystal clear that Israel murdered people and destroyed the sovereign real estate on the sovereign earth of Iran inside Damascus?
Yeah, it's precisely clear and has not really even been denied by the Israelis. The only ones who seem to want to deny it are Antony Blinken and his crew of scoundrels who want to deny everything. They're looking into right now the killing of an American 80-year-old by an Israeli army unit, and they want to sanction the unit. And Netanyahu said no. And so Blinken is sitting on the report that spells out how this 80-year-old guy, American citizen, Palestinian born, was beaten to death by an Israeli army unit. Just another incident in the fog of war, I guess.
How is an 80-year-old Palestinian American of a threat to the IDF? Beyond me, but they'll come up with some sort of an answer. The other veto, this is even more absurd, in the UN was vetoing the admission of the state of Palestine as a country. And the Linda Thomas Greenfield, the U.S. ambassador to the UN, said, we can't admit the Palestinians because they are controlled by a terrorist organization. Was she referring to the state of Israel or the IDF when she said that?
It sounds like Benjamin Netanyahu to me, but I'm a little bit prejudiced on the issue. The fact is this was ridiculous. There are 145 countries in the world that recognize Palestine as a state right now. And the only thing that's stopped Palestine being recognized and giving it some legitimacy in terms of its own sovereignty, which is what Mr. Biden has been saying is the American objective here, that we have a two-state solution. Well, you can't have a two-state solution if you don't allow one of the states to be a state. That would seem to be kind of obvious. But they know there's so much hypocrisy flowing out of Washington. It's sickening. You know, if you spend a whole week looking through the things that are coming out of the White House and press meetings and things like that, it's just it blows your mind. It's all like one big lie that is kind of modified to fit a circumstance and then is changed the next day. It's awful.
Here's former Ambassador David Satterfield, who's now some sort of a negotiator for the State Department's cut number four, Chris, on the future of the Palestinian people in Gaza. This is really absurd what this character says. I really never heard of him before, but we looked him up. He is the former U.S. ambassador to Turkey, and he's now in charge of the some desk, as they call it, in the State Department involving Egypt. You'll see another clip in which he claims he just came back from 6 months of negotiations. But anyway, listen to this, number four.
We believe the future of the Palestinian people of Gaza lies in Gaza, not anywhere else. Egypt has made very clear, preceding October 7th, that they also believe the future for Palestinians lies in Gaza, not in Egypt. We understand that point. We respect it. So does the government of Israel.
How the heck can he say that with a straight face? The government of Israel respects the Gazans to determine their own future?
And he didn't even say Gazans. He kept saying Palestinians. I assume they're going to take all 7 million Palestinians and pile them up in Gaza. And then we'll get Donald Trump's son-in-law to build luxury villas along the seafront there. I mean, this is so absurd. It gets crazier and crazier. I have some familiarity with Mr. Satterfield when I was in Turkey. Ooh. And, you know, it's these people are basically tools of the administration, and they say what the administration wants them to say. If they ever had a conscience in their lives, they dumped it along the way. And this is what's tragic about the U.S. government and its foreign policy. Why are we fighting all these wars? Why are we cranking up even more of them? I mean, this is absurd.
Here's the chief foreign policy spokesman, Tony Blinken himself, 3A, Chris. Does the U.S. have a double standard when it comes to Israel?
The accusations about IDF's military conduct in Gaza have piled up. They include using food as a weapon, targeting civilian infrastructure, indiscriminate bombing, something even the president has said is taking place. So I'm wondering, we know you've got ongoing processes about this, but could you tell us why is it taking so long to make a definitive assessment about these? And the fact that it's taking so long triggers, like, leads a lot of people suggesting that U.S. has a double standard when it comes to applying the law with Israel. Does the U.S. have a double standard? Thank you.
Great. Thanks, Amira. Let me start with the last part of the question. Do we have a double standard? The answer is no. As this report makes clear, in general, as we're looking at human rights and the condition of human rights around the world, we apply the same standard to everyone, and that doesn't change whether the country in question is an adversary, a competitor, a friend, or an ally.
It's just it's just a bald-faced lie when he's talking about Israel. Every time I see him, I think of his meeting of Netanyahu right after October 7th. I come as a Jew, not as I come as the Secretary of State of the United States to try and bring peace. And that animates him all the time. It animates his deception. It animates his lies. It animates what he tells the people who work for him, like this character Satterfield, are supposed to say in public. Your thoughts?
Well, my thought is that this is a total lie. The administration doesn't even breathe unless they get approval from Israel first. In anything it's doing in that part of the world, and also domestically, I might add. And I would cite an example that is so blatant that most Americans don't know about this. But of course, no U.S. government official is allowed to say the fact that Israel has a nuclear armament consisting of 100 or 200 or 300 nuclear missiles.
But that's true. I'm sorry. That's a true statement.
That's a true statement. There now no U.S. government official is allowed to say that. Why? Because there is the Leahy Amendment, which basically would make it impossible or illegal for the U.S. government to keep giving these billions and billions of dollars to Israel, because anyone who has a secret nuclear arsenal is not allowed to receive this kind of money. So this is the kind of duplicity that the U.S. government routinely engages in, and it's engaged in by both Democrats and Republicans.
Here's someone else you may have had some familiarity with in your years in the intelligence community, John Sowers, the former head of MI6, telling a British interviewer over the weekend, it's cut number 10, Chris, that Hamas will reconstitute.
I think Hamas will be able to reconstitute its military forces. There'll be plenty of volunteers for Hamas battalions emerging out of this conflict. And the only real answer to both Gaza and the West Bank is to have an authoritative Palestinian leadership which takes responsibility for those territories in the concept of a context of working towards a Palestinian state, which lives alongside a secure and peaceful Israel.
Well, he's a lot more free to say what he thinks now than when he was the head of MI6. I don't know in what years he was the head, so I don't know who the prime minister was, but surely he doesn't work for Rishi Sunak.
No, what he says is absolutely right, but it's not the doctrine either of the British government or the American government or the French government or the German government. It's essentially one of the comments that I find most astonishing is that when they're talking about the two-state possibility, the United States has several times dropped the comment that before we go that route, Israel has to approve of it. Now, you can imagine when that's going to take place, and never. And the fact is that unless these people have sovereignty and have a real negotiating position that is being protected by the United States and others, they're always going to be victims of what Israel is doing to them right now. I mean, there's the bombing in Rafah started again. They killed one family with 13 people the other day by dropping a bomb on it. This is outrageous. It's atrocious. And we are accomplices up to the eyeballs in all of this. And for those who are thinking that the change is maybe coming, Trump is no better on these issues. He's just as inclined to do everything that Israel wants as is the current administration.
Here's Blinken again, hand-wringing as usual. Number three, where he's being asked by one of the reporters in that room if U.S. arms have been used in war crimes, and why doesn't the U.S. take that seriously?
We are looking into reports, incidents that are brought to our attention, and we have a process to do that, particularly if there are questions about whether U.S. arms have been involved, and that is ongoing, and we are continue to be focused on that. Every situation, every country is different. For example, the case of Ukraine, where we have made certain determinations. Totally different situation than in Gaza. The Ukrainians, first of all, themselves were not in any way a legitimate target, the way, of course, Hamas is in Gaza. They were also not embedding themselves with civilians, hiding in and under apartment buildings, mosques, hospitals, you name it. And in addition, in the case of Ukraine, when Russian forces, for example, withdrew from Bucha, we were able to see, the world was able to see very plainly what had happened, and we were able to get the evidence. So each of these situations is different, and we have to do our best to collect the facts and follow the facts, and that's what we're doing.
If he answers anything directly, do you know what he's referring to in the beginning about we're waiting for the report? Is he talking about the report of that ultra-Orthodox Jewish unit in the IDF that beat the old man, who's a Palestinian-American, to death, to which you referred earlier? Or is he talking about the murder of the seven, you don't even hear about this anymore, as horrible as it was, food service workers, which was only a couple of weeks ago? Do you know what he's talking about?
Well, I think he's talking about specifically the murder of the 80-year-old man beaten to death by the army unit, because it's known that he's been sitting on that report. So I think that would be the suggestion there. But there are also, when the U.S. gives or sells weapons to an allegedly friendly country, there are requirements for follow-up by the Pentagon to make sure that those weapons are not used illegally. Like this is, for example, phosphorus weapons. And the most recent incidents, of course, would be the fact that dropping a 2,000-pound bomb that penetrates through a hospital and destroys it is definitely a misuse of the U.S. weapons. But this clown is not going to say that. This clown knows where his bread is buttered. He's a Jewish guy who's Secretary of State, who is, for any, no matter how you look at it, is not going to push against Israel, and he never will.
You think that he and Biden will back down Well, first of all, how would they do this, Phil? They want to either disarm or not support a unit of the IDF? How could they possibly send instruments of death over there, but say this XYZ unit can't use them? It'd be no, they have no controls over military equipment and ammunition once we deliver it into the hands of the Israelis. Am I right?
That's basically right. I mean, they have no way of really doing a forensic analysis of what takes place in Gaza. They don't have that capability. So they rely on the Israelis to do a, quote, investigation and give them a report. You know what that's going to be like. I mean, it's just, this is a con job, and it's a con job on the American people. It's a con job on the world, and the world is waking up to this, and so are the American people. So it's enough of this. And, you know, it's scary because, you know, the people are being killed even as we speak, and kids are being killed, and women are being killed, and these people, they're digging up in the ruins of the hospitals right now, were had their hands tied behind their backs and were executed. And then they were pushed into a mass grave by an Israeli bulldozer. And there were 300 or 400 people in each of these mass graves. I mean, this is beyond criminal.
If this happens again in Rafah, does your instinct tell you some state actor, not the U.S., not Great Britain, not France, but some state actor, perhaps in the region, will respond?
Well, there certainly was a response from Yemen over the destruction of the consulate general in Damascus. So there are actors who can respond. You know, the situation along the northern border with Lebanon is rather tense at the moment, and Hezbollah has extensive capabilities. So I think you know, there is going to be some more pushback. I would love to see our country doing the right thing, but I have no expectation of that whatsoever.
Phil Giraldi, a pleasure, my dear friend. Thank you for your analysis. Thank you for your courage. And thank you for your consistency and constancy. We'll look forward to seeing you again next week.
Okay, thank you very much. I look forward to it.
Thank you. At 4 o'clock today, on these same issues, but also veering into the latest in Ukraine, Aaron Matei. Judge Napolitano for Judging Freedom.